This month, the UK made two landmark achievements in its bid to reduce carbon emissions. First, the electricity grid went a record 18 days without drawing on coal-fired power. Then, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, announced a new target of zero net emissions by 2050, replacing a previous commitment to reduce emissions by 80% over the same period.
We have a moral duty to leave this world in a better condition than what we inherited. And that's why today we're announcing that we will be ending our contribution to climate change by 2050 and legislating for a net zero emissions target. This will put us on track to be the first major economy to put this commitment into law.
British Prime Minister Theresa May speaking on the BBC earlier this month. Here in Australia, our government has a target of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 26 to 28% below 2005 levels by 2030. So to tell us how the UK intends to fulfil this commitment of zero net emissions by 2050, we're joined from London by Nick Bridge, the UK Foreign Secretary's Special Representative for Climate Change. Nick Bridge, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
It's a very ambitious target and a very dramatic target, zero net emissions by 2050. How is the UK planning to meet this new target, Nick?
Well, we'll be laying out the details in the months ahead, but what we've got is basically having been the first country to set a long-term goal back in 2008, we reviewed that goal 10 years on last year on the basis of the science, the big IPCC report that came out. And that told us clearly that we needed to go further to net zero. So what we're basically doing is enhancing all the things that we've already done. So we've got a clear plan across the big sectors. So energy, land and agriculture, transport, industry, infrastructure. And what we'll be doing in the months ahead is working out how to go from the 80% target all the way to net zero. So in an area like energy, we've gone a lot further. That's been somewhat easier, as you mentioned in your earlier report, coming out of coal for the first time since 1882 and shifting particularly really excitingly into offshore wind in a really big way. That's been a fantastic success. It's meant that we've decarbonized the economy already by 40% or more while still growing well and keeping energy prices down. But now we're moving into the much harder areas. And like every other country, we've now got to find ways to decarbonize in those other sectors. So we have detailed plans being worked up in each of those other sectors to get us on that trajectory.
So how will this affect everyday lives? Energy, we're already, all of us, making some changes, I guess. And there's, you know, metering and sort of behind the wall kind of factors that are already making changes there. There's renewable energy onto the grid and getting the grid adjusted. But for instance, transport, I think you've got a transport road to zero strategy. What's that likely to involve? Is that just a transition to electric vehicles? What does that look like?
Well, let me just quickly, just on your point about energy, it's really important, I think, to say that what we need to make sure of is that people need affordable energy. It needs to be consistent with our climate and our environmental goals, and it's got to be sort of energy secure. Mm-hmm. And our experience so far on the energy side is that we have delivered. Now offshore wind is a cheaper source of energy for us because we've gone it at scale than even new gas, certainly far cheaper than coal and nuclear. So the first thing to say is that our experience so far is that consumers, you know, really benefit. And of course, I've not even got onto the areas where they also benefit in terms of cleaner air for children and livable cities and all of that. So our experience so far guides us as we sort of turn to the future. On transport, you ask about sort of what that looks like. I think there is no particular single pathway, but there are loads of exciting options. Electric vehicles, you've mentioned, with batteries. So you've got to be very careful to make sure that moves forward on a sustainable track, you know, for all the materials you need for batteries. There's also the potential of hydrogen. There's basically electrification of the mass transit that most countries will increasingly rely on as we urbanize. And so what you're trying to do, I mean, I think the sort of positive vision here is that you are transitioning the whole economy. You know, you'll be drawing clean energy from your renewable sources. You'll be storing it in your vehicles, in buildings, in houses. You'll then be using it in a really efficient way with smart metering. And our data and our use of big data and all of that will enable us to do all of this in a much more smart way. So you know, yes, there's definitely going to be impacts on people's lifestyles, huge impacts. But I would stress that, you know, the vision is of incredibly positive benefits.
A couple of quick ones. Just a very quick answer to this, if you will. Do you have a target for the take-up of electric vehicles?
Not a specific target on electric vehicles. We've got the ambition to lead that in Europe, but we've got a target of ending the combustion engine by 2040.
By 2040, okay. And in terms of nuclear, because there is a push in this country to develop nuclear power, we don't have. You do have it there in your country. I think you've around 20% of your electricity is nuclear. What's the affordability? What's the price ratio of nuclear?
Nuclear remains a really key part of our mix, and I mentioned that kind of stability issue. It is coming in more expensive than some of our current renewables, but we think it's a part of a blend that we need going forward.
Okay, but it's currently a bit more expensive than wind, for instance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about costs overall? In a letter leaked to the Financial Times, your Chancellor, Philip Hammond, reportedly warned Theresa May that her plan would cost Britain over £1 trillion. And he said less money would be available for schools, police, hospitals and other areas of spending. Why is it going to cost £1 trillion? And does this factor in, you know, what climate change advocates would always argue, which is the cost of not acting?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't say, okay, if we don't do this, we will have, you know, absolutely catastrophic impacts on all of our economies and try and cost that. What it is a straight up kind of calculation that is essentially, I mean, I would say it'd be better termed as an investment. You mentioned sort of the trillion. It's what you would be investing in a new, cleaner, greener economy.
So what would you be spending £1 trillion on? Because renewable energy, we all know, is allegedly a lot cheaper to build and set up than, you know, coal-fired power plants or...
These are the sort of tens of billions one would be investing in the economy anyway over a 30-year period. And what the figure comes from is saying that that investment has to go into something. And these investments would be going into clean, increasingly zero carbon things, infrastructure and so on. And if you don't do it, if you don't make those kinds of investments and you go into keep on the dirty stuff, you will have these massive impacts, you know, or the climate impacts you've already mentioned and that are not being factored in.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. Our guest is Nick Bridge, the UK Foreign Secretary Special Representative for Climate Change. Nick Bridge, Australia's policy is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 26 to 28% below 2005 levels by 2030. And our government has emphasised that on a per capita basis, Australia's emissions have been dropping. But with Australia's population growing, actual emissions are still rising. Here's our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison.
The government sets our overall emissions reduction targets. Ours have been consistent for many years now, and what's more important is we're meeting them. Our 2020 targets, we will not just meet, we will exceed by 369 million tonnes of abatement, and similarly we'll meet our 2030 targets. So I think, you know, we all agree that you need to take action on climate change, and we're taking responsible and effective action.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison speaking yesterday. Nick Bridge, do you believe Australia's climate change policy is, our targets are ambitious enough?
Well, there's an easy answer, which is that no country's targets have been ambitious enough. And our recent announcement on net zero is what we think the science says is needed. That's the most ambitious target out there for any advanced economy. So if you'll forgive me for slightly sidestepping your direct question, every country needs to do more. Every country, I think, needs to look at the science. What we've done in our system, which we feel has been of interest, is we have this independent climate change committee on climate change. We have these five-year budgets and we have this long-term target, and that works for us.
Okay.
And I think each country's just got to find the way that it goes towards meeting its obligations.
Well, you did sidestep it, and I'd love to push you further. But just briefly, very briefly, if you would, your Conservative Party is currently working out who replaced Theresa May as British Prime Minister. What effect would a successful Brexit have on Britain's ability to meet its zero net emissions plan? Any?
No, there is a lot of technical challenge around, you know, what would our environmental regulations become? What would we do about our emissions trading scheme as part of the EU? But the headline is the thing we've been talking about, the net zero, is domestic legislation locked in, cross-party. So none of that is affected by Brexit.
Nick Bridge, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Nick Bridge, the UK Foreign Secretary's Special Representative for Climate Change.